My name is Craig Clove. I am sober since September 28th, 1985. I live right here in Henderson, Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's a kind of one big ball of lights. Born and raised here. I'm about 5 miles. I'm probably 2 miles as the crow flies from the hospital I was born in. Welcome anybody that is new, or maybe you're not new. Maybe this is the 600th time or whatever, but you're early in sobriety. And I understand that, because I wasn't necessarily it wasn't like a duck takes to water for me either. And, you mentioned something earlier, Stephen, about the people that are thinking about things, about doing things, thinking about, hey, man, I'm really struggling and I'm thinking about drinking, or I'm thinking about using drugs, or even worse, maybe I'm thinking about taking my own life. I'm only about 2 weeks out of one of those that a friend of mine named Chris that I've known, his older brother and I got sober about a month apart. And I've known him pretty much my whole sobriety. And in fact, a guy I sponsor and I were doing a panel meeting at a rehab just, last summer, up at a place he was at. And, I got so much hope, and I just tell people, don't ever give up on this. Don't ever give. I know that Alcoholics Anonymous works. If you'll just hang in. You're probably going to have to start doing some things, taking some actions, getting transparent with people, talking to a sponsor. And if you're like me, I don't need a sponsor in the sense that I need somebody to tell me what to do and got to go over and pick dog poop up in his backyard or whatever those stories are. But I need somebody that I'm current with. I can't afford to have little things tucked away. And this kid hung himself a couple weeks ago. Didn't tell nobody. I got a whole wall full of those people around some of the meetings that I show up in here in Vegas. And that's some real stuff. I don't know. One of the guys when I was, I don't know how long I was, so I wasn't sober. I was sober. I don't know, 10 or 12 years sober, maybe. I don't really remember. But this guy named Frank was a real popular guy here in Vegas. Good looking guy, kind of an Austin Powers type thing, men wanted to be him, women wanted him, all that kind of, nonsense. I mean, he's the guy. He's the guy. One Saturday night, him and his buddies were going, and my sponsor actually was going to the Eric Clapton concert here in Vegas. They were all going to have dinner first, and Frank didn't show up for dinner, and they thought, well, he'll show up at the concert. He didn't show up at the concert. Nobody could get a hold of him. And the next morning, they went over to his office where his contracting company was, and Toby and Scott and his wife Whitney. There's his truck. Oh, she was ticked. If that SOB is in there sleeping, I'm going to kill him. Well, he was in there. But what he had done is he had taken an overdose of narcotics and then had a plastic bag with rubber bands around it so he could pull, this is the police conclusion, pull it over his head and let the rubber bands go around his neck so when he passes out, even if the drugs don't kill him, he'll suffocate. And that's how they found him. And there was a book there on how to commit suicide. And that was the method that's how the police come to how he accomplished this. 24 years sober. Popular guy, a lot of meetings, all the dances and things like that. But a couple of key figures had left his life. His dad was one, and his sponsor, Wade Bergen, was the other. Wade had died. You know, he'd gotten older and stuff, and cancer and all that. He didn't have anybody he was being transparent with. He couldn't have anybody that, and, you know, there's speculation, like there always is around something like this, that, well, he was doing this, he was doing that. I don't know what he was doing. I don't know what he was doing. Because I didn't talk to him and I wasn't there if he was doing it. But I know he was a good guy and he helped me a lot. And that's a tragedy. Sometimes these things are a long thought out situation. And then sometimes I think they're just an impulsive spur of the moment. I don't know how long Chris had been thinking about killing himself. But he did it. I don't know. Another gal here 2 years ago, Sydney Kaplan, 37 years sober, shot herself in the head, sponsoring a bunch of gals and all. I have no idea what that is. I don't know. Anyway, so you brought that up, Stephen, not to get all morbid and heavy in this, but if there's anybody, any of those kind of thoughts floating through your head tonight that can hear my voice, hang around. After this, there's people here you can talk to. There's people here, no matter what you've done, there's people here that you can talk to. Or if you're not comfortable with that, there's people you can talk to that can get you a phone number to somebody close to where you live that you can talk to. My grandfather told me a story, well, when I was a little kid, I always wanted to be a cowboy. That was what was popular when I was growing up through the 60s and early 70s and Gunsmoke and Bonanza and the Wild Wild West and all that stuff. And I always wanted to be a cowboy. And I want to ride a horse. And of course, they got me because I'm just little, you know, 7 or 8 years old. They get me a Shetland pony. Well, I don't want to ride the short bus either. You know what I mean? A Shetland pony is, I want to ride the big horse like the big guys do. And I want to ride old Nugget because he's the spirited one. I want to ride him, man. He's just an exciting horse. And my grandpa told me, he said, you know, Craig, you get on. He's a big old horse and he's strong. When he decides it's time to go home, he's going to turn and you're going home, whether you like it or not. And he said, you know, when he decides to run, you know what you do, don't you? And I, oh, yeah, Grandpa, I jump off. He said, no, 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 no. The worst thing you could do is jump off. He said, man, we wouldn't know where to find you. You could get hurt really bad. He said, hell, we wouldn't. He said, old Nugget, he's just going to come home. We'll see him back down at the barn. He'll just walk back to the corrals, but we won't know where to find you. All right, Grandpa. Well, I want to ride him. So Grandpa saddles him up, and, you know, I got to climb up on the manger to be able to get my foot in the stirrup to get up on him. And then up above town we go. Well, sure enough, old Nugget decides time to go. And he turns around, and I'm pulling and doing all I can. He's a hammerhead is what he is. And he decides to take off. I get scared, panic, and jump. And I didn't get hurt. I got scuffed a little bit. I didn't get hurt, but it was a long walk home. And, you know, Grandma and them were all looking for me in the car. Oh, where is he at? Oh, my God, I'm glad you're okay and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, and Grandpa said, did he throw you or did you jump? Well, Grandpa, I jumped. He said, I told you, man, grab that saddle horn and lock on. And just don't hold on. Well, he said, you're going to have to get back on that horse. And so the next day, you know, we saddle up and away I go on Nugget again. And I'll be damned, I get back up there above town and that fool runs again. And I'm scared to death, and I hung on for a minute, but finally I jumped. And this time I did get hurt. I thought I broke my arm. And, you know, I was scuffed up pretty good. Of course, they kind of figured where I was by then and come up above town and found me walking along crying. And, oh, my God, take me to the hospital, get me checked out. It was a week or so before I could ride him again. And the next day, Grandpa, you jumped again. Yeah, I jumped again. I told you, you got to hang on. Well, I was scared, Grandpa. I was scared. He said, I know you're scared. But jumping off's going to get you hurt. You got to stay on. It's going to get scary, but you got to hold on to it. Well, me and old Nugget decide to go down across the Virgin River down to the fields, and I'm down through all those river willows and tamaracks and everything, and I got my little cowboy hat and my little toy guns on and all that, and Nugget decides it's time to go home. And fortunately, it was sandy, so I wasn't too worried about jumping, but those willows were whipping me. And I, you know, I mean, it just in the face and knocked my hat off, and one of my little guns fell. And I'm telling you, I never been so scared in my life. I grabbed that saddle horn, and I'm screaming. I'm crying. I got snot running out of my nose. I'm just howling. You think a wild animal's being tortured. And, I hang on, and for whatever happened, I hang on to that horse, and that horse is running. And then he starts trotting, and then he's walking. And we turn around and go back and get my hat and gun. And I get back on that horse. And you know what? He never ran with me again. He never ran with me again. And I told Grandpa the story, and he said, that's because you hung in and didn't jump. The worst thing you can do, and I've noticed this in AA. A lot of us get really scared. And I can't make it, or I can't make this divorce, or I just got fired, or I'm going to get caught, whatever the deal is to scare me to death. And I jump and I drink, or worse. And I get that. And why I need people around me that are sober is to, and active in Alcoholics Anonymous is, look, man, the answer is more AA, not less AA. Yeah, but man, I gotta stay home this weekend. I gotta work on myself and get myself straightened out. Really? You need to stay home and work on yourself and get yourself straightened out. Yeah. You've been working on yourself. Look at the condition you're in. I think you do need to do less work on you and more work on God's kids. And that, when you're out of your own way, God seems to be able to sneak in and do a little business when you ain't even looking. And, you know, that has been my experience. You know, I got sober. I grew up, and as I'd said, I grew up here in Henderson, and it was a charm. You know, if you'd asked me when I was new, well, let me put it this way. I believe in something. I've heard that you can't change your childhood. Well, maybe my brothers can't change theirs, but mine sure as heck changed. When I started making amends and cleaning things up, and I got an entirely different picture of a childhood that I had that was marvelous. And I'd have told you 35 years ago, oh, my childhood was terrible. I was so abused. And oh, hell, my parents did abuse me. They loved me. They gave me everything they possibly could. They gave me a nice life. They gave me every opportunity. I got four brothers, two older and two younger. They're all doing well. My older one, just older than me, died last Mother's Day, but they're all doing better than me. Or are they all doing good? They always were. And then there was me, you know, by the same parents. And, you know, now I sit with my brothers and we talk about our childhood, and it's just magical. And I owe that to Alcoholics Anonymous, to sponsorship, to you guys, to people armed with facts about themselves that weren't afraid to share them with me. When I say I have a bad attitude, I don't mean my demeanor and all that is bad, but my attitude is about my angle of approach. How do I approach things? You know, when it talks about in our book about we've been trying to get a new relationship, a new attitude towards God and our fellows, it doesn't mean a better mood. It means, how do I approach you? How do I approach Stephen or Phil or Alfonso? How do I approach Renee? You know what I mean? Am I going to approach people like if I'm going to come at you on the muscle, I'm going to put you on the muscle. Anyway, So I had a pretty much a charmed childhood. The only problem was I was in it. And, you know, I've always had whatever it is that I think is wrong with me was wrong with me long before I ever drank. long before. I remember being a kid and feeling like I'm the only one. I remember being a kid thinking, I had this feeling like, I feel like everything goes out from me. You know what I mean? Like all of you and the stars and everything is an extension of, like, I am the center of the universe. Or at least the center of this town. And AA people told me, well, that's called self-centered, Craig, and self-absorbed. And I really didn't think, and I heard you talking about it at meetings, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. It's not the root of my troubles. I don't see what it's got to do with anything. But there was always that feeling in chapter 3, and yeah, we're going to be all over the place. So I'll tell you a very quick little detail that happened. I went to the doctor day before yesterday to get the complete workup, the blood work, the physical, and I'm in perfect health, except my oxygen is low. And I'm a dingbat. And that's because my heart is out of rhythm again. I got that AFib. And it's terrible. I don't know what dementia's like, but I know I can be in the middle of a conversation and then all of a sudden start another one or end up in the middle of one that I was having 3 days ago and not even know. And so it makes me a little bit of a dingbat, and it's a little awkward. I'm a little better today. But you know, I just keep doing the things the doctor told me to do with the sleep apnea mask and all that nonsense, because somehow or another they think those things are related. Anyway, so we might drift a little bit, jump around a little bit, is the long and short of this story. So in growing up, I always felt like something was wrong with me. In our book, it talks about, you know, most of us have been unwilling to admit that we were real alcoholics. And I'm not really. I'm not really an alcoholic. I might be. I'm alcohol-ish, okay? I'm alcohol-ish, which is not ick. It's ish. I mean, like, when I'm drinking, Alfonso, sometimes, because you were there, and I shouldn't have been hanging out with you and Dan, and that's really the problem. I'm not... Listen, Alphonse and Dan were the problem, and they wouldn't stop, and so I didn't want to be like a tourist, so I drank along with them, and that's how I overdid it a little bit, but that's not because I'm alcoholic. I'm alcoholic, or I shouldn't hang out with people like that. I'm going to do it all different. Next week, it's going to be me, Annette, and Renee, and it'll be totally different. And, you know, the next week when it's me and Annette and Renee, I'm like, do you two know Dan and Alphonse? I mean, something's up. You guys are, I mean, here I am again. I'm not alcoholic. I'm alcohol-ish. My drinking is not really a problem, usually. And that's kind of the way I took things, you know. Besides, I'm a party guy, and I'm entitled to have a little fun, right? And all whatever excuses I use. And as things go on, you know, in the beginning, for lots of us, it's lots of fun for a long period of time. But then as time goes on, it just sort of like, I end up with these consequences seem to start being a little more severe. And I don't really like the consequences, but I'm still having some fun. So we'll try to balance that a little bit. We'll watch this a little bit. And, you know, I'll maintain a little better and quit hanging out with those four, and it'll change my life. And I just find another four. I don't know how I got the knack for doing that. But I don't want to admit that I'm an alcoholic. It says that no one likes to think that they're bodily and mentally different from their fellows, but yet most of us here on this meeting, I would bet if we sat and had a conversation, you would tell me the same thing I'm going to tell you. I always felt somehow separate from or different than the people that I was around. I didn't fit with the people in church. I don't fit with the people in school completely. I sort of do a little bit. I'm the same age and the same grade, but they seem to like this stuff, you know, in the church thing especially. They seem to be all into it, and I'm not. I'm not. I'm just not. And, you know, growing up in a good household and a good religious family, and I never made a connection with that. I never made a connection. I always had this real big, like I have this need to disconnect from that. Because everything I think is fun, they think is sin. You know what I mean? It's like, well, drinking, the Mormons don't drink. Well, they should. And it'd probably wipe that smug off their face. But, you know, and you name it. You don't. You know, now girls are bad. You know, girls, you don't ever want to do that. Really, it's all I think about. What do you mean I don't, but you can't tell them that? You're 12 years old. What the hell are you going to tell the guy? And, it's just endless. And they want you to go to church like all day on Sunday. And if that ain't enough, they got stuff to do before school in the morning, Monday through Friday, and then a Wednesday night situation, and there's always some kind of a road show. Look. I mean, the Catholics can drink, and that was appealing to me, and they can ride motorcycles on Sunday, and once in a while they go to church, but they don't have to go all the time, and I'm thinking that would have been a better deal. My neighbor Clark Woolridge was Catholic, and anyway, you know, so I don't really have this connection and with this God thing, and my friends that I grew up with, they're like into it, and my brothers are into it. And I am not into it. And so you can imagine my disappointment when I end up in AA and then end up starting, the lights are coming on. I realize that this is a spiritual program. I don't like the spirituals. I'm not going to do the spiritual AA stuff. We'll leave that for that Sunday morning meeting. So I'm just going to do regular AA. As if, you know, because I think regular AA is just AA and telling your war stories and blah, blah, blah. And anyway. So By the time I got here, I'm a mess. I mean, I remember being young and first finding out what effects are produced by alcohol. Oh, my God. It'd be like that guy finding the fountain of youth. You know, it was like, holy cow, this is magic. Magic. I never felt so good in my life. I never knew I was even feeling that bad till the first time I felt that good. You know what I mean? I mean, like, oh, my God, this is incredible. And you want to go, but you're infested with a bunch of Mormons around you, and you're not supposed to drink, so you can't go tell anybody. So it's my little secret. Oh, my God, I have found the magic. Oh, my God, and I got the bishop's daughter drinking, and she found magic, and then we found magic, and then she told, and oh, my God, they're going to excommunicate. It's a bad scene. The bad scene. See, women are bad. That's the way it is. Anyway. Oh my God. And I learned this at a young age. And, I'm a train wreck, but drinking fixes that. It fixes it. I didn't know. You know, I'll tell you this is kind of a disgusting story, but I'm going to tell it anyway, because it kind of is in my mind, a picture of the progression of this thing with me. And I tell the story about, you know, now the story is not true, obviously, but it would be much like this. It'd be like when I was a little kid, I didn't have anybody to play with. And my dad brought home a baby gorilla one day. This baby gorilla, this little gorilla. And he was my pal. He was my pet. He was my friend, Greg. Here, Craig, here's a little gorilla. I just love you. You take care of him. Everything's good. I got this baby gorilla, and he is awesome. And he's tough, too. You know, ain't nobody in the neighborhood messes with me, because I'll put that gorilla on him, and he'll thump him, because he's strong. And, you know, the gorilla teaches me how to climb trees and swing from branch to branch and all that kind of stuff, fights my battle. This little gorilla is just awesome in the beginning. But as we start getting older and this gorilla starts maturing, he would hug me and sit in my lap and play and he slept and he was wonderful. But as we got older, this little gorilla started touching me in places that I'm not really comfortable with you doing that. However, you still teach me to climb trees and fight battles for me, so I'm kind of willing to take some of the consequences, right? But I am uncomfortable. I'm having some discomfort with what he's trying to do. Well, as time goes on, you know what happens. The gorilla becomes a mature gorilla. And when no means no, I just get thrown down and he does what he wants to do. And you cross the big line, man. Oh my God. And in the hospital I go and the doctors want to know what in the hell has happened to you. Well, I got this gorilla. Oh my God. You got a gorilla. Oh my God. You're lucky you're not dead. Well, and they stitch me up and heal me up and send me home and tell me, now listen, do not let that gorilla out of that cage. Oh, no, I won't. Because he'll do it again. Oh, no, no, I won't let him out. I won't let him out. And I go home and I'm walking around and the little gorilla is sitting over in the cage waving at me, pointing at that doorknob. Nope. Nope. And he's just, come on, come on. And, you know, he don't talk, but he knows what he's signaling me and wants me to open the door. And I'm, no, 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 I'm pointing at my tail end. And nope, nope, nope. And he does this. He's promising me. He's promising me he won't do it. One day I'm walking by that cage and I open the damn door. And he comes out and he's pretty friendly and he gives me a big hug. And then you know what happens. It happens again. And back to the hospital I go. And the doctor's going, what? Again? What dude, we just got, we ain't even got the stitches out from the last time yet. What are you doing? How come you're a mess? Well, it wasn't my fault. You know, he promised me. He promised me. Well, you know, whatever. We told you, you got to leave him in the cage. And we get home. I get patched up and get home and one day I'm walking by the cage and he's just sitting there and he's getting tired of doing this because I'm not giving into it. And one day I'm walking by the cage and he's just sitting there and he's looking at me at those big, dark, sad eyes, sad look on his face. And I think, aw. And I open the door again and you know what happens. You know what happens? The doctor says, you are obsessed with having a fling with this gorilla. No, you got it all wrong. I'm not obsessed with this. I just wanted to pet him. I just wanted to pet him. How many times do we go out on another run? I'm only going to have a couple. I'm just going to have a couple. Because I really don't know what the nature of my illness is. I really don't understand this phenomenon of craving. It doesn't seem like a phenomenon to me. I go out, I have a couple of drinks, I'm with Alfonso and Dan, and we're shooting pool, you know, Mary and Annette come in the bar, and I'm like, hey, man, these girls want to, well, so we'll have a couple more. It's not the, hey, look, there's Pat with, and Claudia, oh, and Phil, nobody likes Phil, but Phil's here, so we can celebrate that, and, you know, and it's just, and there's no phenomenon in that. I just see my friends and I change my mind. Steve and I told you I was going to have two, but back off, dude. You're not my mother. You know what I'm saying? Just back off. I'm not out of control. I've complete control of this. And that's the deadly aspect of this thing called alcoholism. It uses my mind against me. I don't understand how it does that. Obviously in the beginning, my drinking was just much like that. It was a lot of fun for a long time. And then it was fun with consequences. And then it was just pretty much consequences at the end. And in those moments of that desperation of how do you not jump? I mean, you know, that thing in chapter 11 is so magical. Oh, God, we've been rambling forever. We got to shut up here. That thing in chapter 11 is so magical when it says, for most normal folks, That's none of us. If you're on this meeting, you're not normal, so we're not talking to you. But it says drinking means conviviality. Conviviality. I don't even know what that word means, but I'll bet I like it. I'm going to go give me some conviviality tonight. That's what I'm going to do. What does it mean? I got no idea, but it's better than just sitting here in this chair. Companionship and colorful. Colorful imagination. It means, this is an important line to me, it means release from care, boredom, and worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. Now, this was published, I don't know how long, 50 years before I was freaking in AA. More than that. I don't know. Long time before I was in AA. Anyway, and a feeling life is good. And then it goes right into, but not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. There were just memories, man. Never, never, never could we recapture those great moments of the past. And they were fantastic. There was an insistent yearning inside of me, this insistent yearning. God, I want it to be like it used to be, and it's not. To enjoy life like I once did, and this heartbreaking obsession that I've developed, that some new miracle of control, combinations of other things, you know, Bill uses the words, and Dr. Bob, sedatives and high-powered sedatives, quite all these other things we, you know, whatever, you know, to try to enjoy life as we once did, that some new miracle of control. I know by this point that I've got a little situation with drinking. Like, not like I got a problem or anything. Let's not go way out there like problem. I just got a little situation. We need some adjustments. That some new miracle of control was going to enable me to do that. So, guess what? There was always one more attempt. If you're like me, it was another failure. The less people tolerated me, the more I withdrew from society, from life itself. You know, at the one time, we're the kind of people that will stand up at the party beating on our chest saying, I'll drink you under the table, Mike. I'll drink all of you guys under the table. We're those people in college and whatnot, our younger years. And then there comes a time where I don't want anybody to know how much I'm drinking. I'm ashamed of how much I'm drinking. I'm ashamed of the way I drink. You know, when you go, you can't just go to the Christmas party. You got to get fortified to go to the Christmas party. So by the time I get to the Christmas party, I'm already beyond recall. But I know there's going to be drinking at the Christmas party. I don't want to look like a tourist. I'm going to have to drink. But I'm ashamed of how much I drink. And that doesn't seem to matter. It says, as we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down, and it thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval, and momentarily sometimes we would. But then, it always happened. Here it comes, oblivion, and the awful awakening again to face. It says the hideous four horsemen, but you know what you're waking up to face, Pat. You're waking up to face the kids, the boss, the husband, the wife, them. It's them. I don't want to deal with them. And you all know who they are. They are those that are not us. They're them. I don't like them. And they apparently do not like me. And it's just, oh, my God, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. It says, unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. I'll bet I read this 100 times and never heard it. Now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, oh, man, I don't miss it at all. Claudia, I can't believe it, how happy I am that I found this thing. I feel better. I work better. I'm having a better time. But as ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a Sally, because you knew the truth. You know I'm like a boy whistling in the dark trying to keep up my spirits. You know I'm not happy about this. I fooled myself. Inwardly, tell you the truth, I give anything to take half a dozen drinks, not two. not two, half a dozen drinks and get away with it. It says he'll presently try, you know, you're going to presently try the old game again. And then it tells you why. I'm not happy about my sobriety. I'm not. I haven't done anything yet. I haven't done any Alcoholics Anonymous. I've just stopped taking the medicine. See, I'm worse sober than I am drunk. That's why I drink. And even though drinking causes me a lot of pain and grief and everything, but I keep looking for that freedom on the inside. And, you know, it just got to the point where I'm not getting free anymore. It's not turning me loose. In the beginning, when that thing did that magic and turned me loose and set me about and let me go free and run around and be the life of the party and all that, oh my God, it was outstanding. But it ain't doing that anymore. All it's doing is causing me a lot of shame and a lot of pain and a lot of remorse and a lot of regret and a lot of guilt and a lot of stupid, inconvenient problems. It's costing me jobs. It's costing me my marriage. It's costing me my family. It's cost me my driver's license. It's cost me a lot. He said he'll try it again because he can't picture. I couldn't picture life without alcohol. Couldn't do it. And it says someday, he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then that's the moment. That guy is going to know, or that gal is going to know loneliness like few people ever do. They will be at the jumping off place, and they will wish for the end. And we're not talking about the end of the pain. We're talking about the end of our life. Like my friend Chris. Like our friend Robin Williams. Like a lot of our famous friends and a lot of our friends that, you know, you have friends, I have friends. I mean, we don't, you know. Why'd they do that? Possibly right here. I can't imagine life without alcohol. And I can't imagine it with it either. I don't want any more cheese, as my sponsor says. I just want out of the trap. It says, we've shown how we got out from under. Okay, guys, we've shown, I mean, in the AA meetings and stuff and these Zoom rooms and the things that we do. And by the way, this is awesome. And I was a Zoom hater. And this is the second one. I just did one just before this with a bunch of guys I do every Saturday in my sponsorship line. Anyway, and we just love it. Anyway, it says that we've shown how we got out from under. And you say, Craig, you say, yeah, I'm willing. But am I to be consigned to a life where I'm going to be stupid, boring, and glum? Like those people I see down at the Thai club at the AA meeting. Oh, my God, it's pitiful. I don't want to be like that. I just some righteous people I see. I know that I must get along without liquor. I get it. I got to get along somehow. And it's not good news because I've tried not drinking before. And I don't like it. I've tried not drinking a whole bunch of times, and I always drink. Why do you drink? Because I don't like not drinking. That's why. My life sucks when I don't drink. Well, it sucks when you're drinking, too. Well, yeah, it does, doesn't it? Turns out. But again, that's probably Phil's fault or something like that. It's not really me. And it says, I'm going to ask you the question. So, okay, Stephen, do you have a sufficient substitute? And you get all excited. You get all excited. And you say, yeah, we got a substitute. And you know what? It's a lot more than that. I remember being at a party one night, and you've had enough to drink and stuff and whatnot. We kind of running thin and the keg run out or something happened. I don't remember what it was, but there wasn't enough to keep drinking. And I said, well, God dang it, man, we got to do something. And now we can't get no more. And he said, well, you know what? You got to try some of this. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, it'll be a good substitute. Oh, my God, it was great. It set me free. It did a great job. And I'm thinking when you guys get excited about this, yeah, we got a substitute. And it's a lot more than that. Really? What is it? You do? Yeah, it's vastly more than that. What is it? It's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. What else you got? You know what I mean? I mean, that just doesn't blow my skirt up or whatever. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a fellowship. You're excited about a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous? You've got to be kidding me. Remember that line I told you to listen to that was real important? It means release from care, boredom, and worry. Listen to this. Because I heard people in AA say, I heard people, old fools in there saying, oh, you know, I found out that AA does for me what drinking used to do. Oh, my God. You got to be kidding. You think, I mean, I don't, that's ridiculous. You didn't have what I had. You didn't drink. Oh my God. I feel you're pathetic. Don't ever say that again. But here's what it says. Yeah, it's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There, you're going to find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will actually mean something at last, Craig. You know what? You're 27 years old, kid, and you think the best has already been, don't you? Yep, I sure do. You're wrong, man. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. If you're willing to do the work here, the most I don't care what you go through, the most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. And it says, thus we find the fellowship, and so we hope. Well, you, it says, so will you. But I mean, that's my hope for you. If you're in here and you're kind of, not exactly skipping the road to happy destiny. I mean, I get that. I mean, this last, I've been in the worst spot I've ever been in my entire life this last year ever. And it's just horrific. But it's meetings like this and people like you that give me the hope to come back. It's when asked to participate and to not critique everybody here. And let me tell you what you need to be doing and what you need to be wearing and how you need to sit and how, stay out of all that. Stay out of all that. You go and show up and be useful where you can. When you're asked to participate or have the opportunity to participate, you carry a message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's it. And be humble and be helpful. And you go stick your hand out to a new man. And you say, my name's Craig. Do you have a sponsor? I don't want to be your sponsor. But until you find somebody you like, here's my number. Don't try doing this thing alone because I. Just go have that conversation. Whatever it is that worked with you when you were new. Because all of us were new at least once. At least once. And some of us made more of a habit of it for a while. And not knowing what the hell was wrong with me. Not knowing what was wrong with me. But I got around some people that, strangers. I'd never met anybody here before. And there's nobody I know from my childhood here that I know in AA and here in Las Vegas. And hell, I grew up here. And none of my old running partners and stuff. But I'll tell you what, there's people in my life today that are like family to me. It's an incredible thing. That little meeting I was on earlier, this thing that a bunch of us do, we're all sponsored by the same guy in that same line. And shit, I'm as close to them, maybe more so than I am to my brothers. And my brothers just live right here and I'm close to them. And it's an amazing thing. I did not know that I would end up with the kind of life that I have. Everything that I have ever, I never imagined it could be like this. I never imagined that it could be like this. That despite the remorse and regret and the pain I have, but I'm still happy and useful. You know, I'm not having the time of my life right now. No, I'm not having the time. But I'm willing to show up and I'm willing to clean up. You know, there'll be times in your sobriety, then I'll shut up, Stephen. There'll be times in sobriety you're going to, at least it's been my experience, to face some really tough things. you know, when people get sick and parents and kids and things like that, it's really, 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 really divorce and all that kind of stuff. It's really tough. But how I conduct myself, I can't control how I feel, but my buddy Don Major has me convinced that I can control my actions. And this is all about action. Because an old man asked me 36 years ago, I was grumbling about, well, when I feel better, I'll do more AA and stuff. And he said, let me ask you something, sport. He said, did you ever wait to feel drunk before you started drinking? And I didn't catch, what? He said, did you wait to feel drunk before you started drinking? And I said, well, that'd be stupid. He said, well, that's what I'm saying. You want to feel better, but you don't want to do nothing. Action first, man. It's always action first. And when you come across those times in your sobriety where you have really screwed up, when you screw up, or what I like to say, when you mess up, you fess up, and then you clean it up. And that's the course you guys have taught me about here. Mess up, fess up, clean up. And that's just what I'm in the process of. And sometimes it's long and tedious. And you're 36 years sober, and Jesus, you know, and you're doing, you know, you make the coffee, and yeah, I'm gonna stay active, and I'm gonna stay busy. The guys I sponsor say, God, you know, you're always doing something. Yep, because I don't want to sit home and study myself, because the conclusions I come up with when I sit home and study myself are never good. They're never good. Every disaster I've ever had. We all hear this all, you know, I didn't get in trouble every time I drank, but every time I've been in trouble, every time I got in trouble, I've been drinking. That's not my story. I ain't drank in 36 years. I've been to jail twice. Right? Once at 25 years sober, right after I left my home group business meeting where I'm a legend. An hour later, I'm in handcuffs. 19 hours later, they let me out of jail. I took a $40 cab ride back to get my truck, went home, showered, came back to the morning meeting, and they were all, where'd you go yesterday? They all knew. Well, your secretary went to jail is what he did, you know, and you fess up. You fess up. Those things are going to happen. I'm not saying everybody here is going to go to jail, but when you break a guy's window with a golf club, probably. I was trying to teach him how to drive. He said he had a gun, and I jump out of the truck with a golf club. He's pointing at me like he's going to shoot me. He's a truck driver, and he's in a 18-wheeler, and I'm in my little Ford pickup, and I get out, and I'm in my matching golf outfit. Glove, hat, shorts, belt, you know, shoes, socks, tees, the whole thing. They didn't even put me in the orange and blues when they took me to jail. How much more humiliated could it be to leave him in that golf, leave him in that outfit? Put him in jail with those guys in that outfit. Sit on the bench, son. And oh my God, it was horrible. And 500 people saw it, and 50 of them are in AA. My phone was blowing up. Blowing up. You okay? How does it look like? I'm standing here in handcuffs. The guy said, boy, the cop said, boy, you're popular. I said, well, I'm the boss of all of those people. He said, well, not today. I hope your replacement shows up. Oh, man. You know what? Stuff happens. But I don't make a big scene about it and cry and, oh, let me tell you what those SOBs. No, I did that. I did that all on my own. I didn't need to. Should I pause when agitated, Bob? Hey, Bob, this is Craig. I'm going to jump out and break this guy's window with a golf club. Should I pause? I'm agitated. Nope, I intuitively knew how to handle the situation that would normally baffle me. I jumped out of the truck with a golf club, and I just meant to tap his window. I just meant to say tap, tap. But when you're amped up like that, the tap was more of a whack, and that window exploded. Oh, my God. Anyway, so that's enough of that. So, yeah, that's what you got tonight. There's your speaker tonight, a stellar example of Alcoholics Anonymous. In traffic, people everywhere, everybody knows. They call me Nine Iron at the convention center. That's what the security calls me now. They don't call me, hey, Craig, how you doing? Hey, Nine Iron, what's going on, buddy? Hey, Nine Iron, what's going on? Yeah, I'm like, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. So anyway, man, I'm really glad to be here with you guys. Thank you all for inviting me to your meeting. You got a great thing going on, a great thing going on here. Anybody that might be struggling, because I'll be honest with you, I'm struggling. But you might not know that listening to me, because it's the angle of approach. It's the attitude, not my mood. It's the angle of approach that changes everything. And you have control over your angle of approach. You can be having a real bad day and still show up with a smile and say, "Hey, Alfonso, how you doing? I like the way you read that." You know what I mean? You can say, "Hey, Stephen, thank you guys for inviting me and Phil for jumping on, because I know you're at the service conference and all that, for getting on and being a part of this. I really appreciate the invite. I'm honored by you guys' confidence." Anyway, that's more than enough out of me. Thanks.